Welcome to Living as Love with Jared. This is our 26th episode in our podcast series on awakening. Each month we aim to bring you a different episode on all topics relating to awakening consciousness in the context of modern life. I'm Sophia James, and as always I'm joined by Jared Franks, international teacher and speaker and Leela school teacher and mentor. This is part two of our sex, death and madness topic. Enjoy.
My cousin used to always say to me, we'd go to Friday night dinner, she'd say, how's the cult going? And that was actually, that's a good little metaphor, because I didn't like get upset with her. And I actually used it to open, to actually say, wait a minute, am I in a cult? Oh, no. I mean, absolutely not by any definition of what that means. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to believe anything. I don't have to follow anybody. I have to wear anything in particular. There's nothing to do. It's all by free choice. And then to force me to open to this image so that people think I'm in a cult. People think I've gone crazy. And for me, that was like death. And I had to say yes. Only because I know the truth is true. And I'm devoted to truth. I'm devoted to silence, to love, to a quiet mind and an open heart, and to knowing who I am. And in that devotion, I'm willing for the whole world to think that I'm crazy. Because it's okay. I understand why they would think that. And I'm too busy being happy to worry about that.
Yes. I mean, to me, that seems so courageous, you know, that you speak about all of this and you just surrendered to it. Does it feel courageous?
I would say yes on some level. I mean, I don't feel that about myself, but I mean, for me, it felt a little bit more like I had no choice. Like I often use the metaphor of, you know, it's scary to jump off the balcony, but when you're in a burning building, you have no choice. And that's how it felt to me, that my life was a burning building, basically, and my mind was a burning building. And so I had to jump into the unknown because I couldn't stay there any longer. Mm. And that did also come from continuously telling the truth. So the more I told the truth, the more I realized how much suffering was involved with my ego. Mm-hmm. I was constantly thinking, constantly comparing myself, constantly feeling not good enough, inflating, deflating. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, courageous maybe, but it's not a courage that I have separate to anybody else. It's a part of our nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have another question here. Death has always scared me. I know this is not very spiritual, as I should embrace death and face it, but I don't want to die or for anyone I love to die either. It's something I honestly have not been able to face, but I know one day I'll have no choice. I want to be able to face it fully. Do you have any advice for me?
Oh, so beautiful. I mean, that's actually the realization is that we actually love life. You know, there is a love of life. And that doesn't have to conflict with death, because death is actually part of life. You know, I used to think that death was the opposite of life. There's life and then there's death, but it's not. The opposite of death is birth. There's birth and death, but life doesn't have an opposite. And so death and birth happen within the context of life. So if you love life, you must love death too. And I know that that doesn't maybe make sense to the mind, but it's a part of life is death, and we think of death as bad. That's all I'm asking you to inquire into your projections about death. about what it means, about who is going to disappear when your body dies. And what disappears when your body dies, what is it really? Who are you? And in the willingness to inquire into the truth of the matter, it's possible to discover that you and life are not separate, so that life doesn't die when your body dies. And so fundamentally, you don't die when your body dies. But you can't believe that. I don't want you to believe what I'm saying. You have to inquire into the true nature of things and see, who do I think I am? What is it that I'm afraid to lose when my body dies? And then just question that belief and that thought. What if that belief just disappeared? What if everything you're afraid to lose, let's look at it this way. You're afraid of death, and that's very natural. Every animal and even plants, I would say, don't like to die. They all want to live. But death is a natural part of life. And so now if you just look and see, what is it you're afraid to lose when you die? And then just as an experiment, lose it all now while you're alive. Lose everything. Lose your story. Lose your gains, your successes. Lose your relationships. Lose your accomplishments. Lose your possessions. Just as an experiment, not trying to be cynical here, but just as an experiment, what happens when you lose everything right now? It certainly lightens the load. Mm.
Yes.
And what you find is you can't lose life. You can't lose consciousness. Consciousness is beyond gain and loss. And so there's something here, even if you don't call it consciousness, but there's something here that remains after you lose everything. Mm-hmm. And that's alive. And that's really, to me, that's what I would call me or you, is that which is left when you've lost everything. Because it's what's here that doesn't come and go. It's what's always here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think Eli summed it up really beautifully in one of his books. And he says, it takes great courage to be willing to live, and at the same time to be willing to die. And that's what it takes to directly realize and serve the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you're either afraid of life or afraid of death, there must be a me that's caught in that. And then your life then is in service to this egoic identity. And if you want the truth, which is what doesn't come and go, you have to be willing to go beyond the identity. And in that, you just have to be willing to die for the truth. Not just to die, but to die for love, for truth, for freedom.
Yes. Ah, yes. That's really what it is, what it feels like. That's what the experience of it, for sure. Yeah. So let's talk about sex. I've got a question. The topic of sex brings up an excitement and also a disgust. I'm so confused by it, and at the same time, I want and need it. This indeed feels like a kind of madness. Why do I have this response to sex?
Well, I think that's based in our conditioning. You know, animals don't have a problem with sex, and they all treat it in their own way. And I think you can see in the history of human beings, there were periods where we were, let's say, enlightened around sex at some level, not totally, but where we didn't have the same sense of disgust or moral disgust around sex. And that, to me, my opinion is that our current sense of moral disgust around sex is all based in the Judeo-Christian religion, and that it turned into something around sin and around chastity and that it's something you need to protect. And it probably came from a good intention in a way to protect the young and to protect your own sense of wholeness. But it has been twisted, in my opinion, to into being something in and of itself being morally wrong or being disgusting, which to me is just the way the ego has labeled it, part of this id, and that our uncontrollable sexual animal urges are somehow disgusting or bad, which is ridiculous. And it really, sex is a, is the method by which our genes reproduce. You know, there are worms that just split in half and become two worms. We reproduce through sex. And that if, you know, Papaji once said that somebody asked him, you know, well, then why does it feel so good? And he said, so that you'll do it. And that's, you know, that's actually it. That's the genetic impulse to do it. They make it feel good so that you do it and so that the genes will reproduce. So in that, it's not personal. You know, this is literally the selfish gene. This is the genes telling you what to do. And you might have the thought, oh, she's pretty sexy or he's pretty good looking and I want to make love to him or her. Not realizing that this is a genetic impulse coming from deep inside to reproduce. And of course, we're more sophisticated and we can have sex for enjoyment and there's no problem with that. But certainly not morally or ethically disgusting. And by having that view, you can make it like that. You know, it's like you create your reality in that sense by making it disgusting. And we see how that happens. I mean, when it's repressed, it then festers and then it explodes and becomes something. So we see priests, for example, who are not allowed to have sex with anybody and then they're found to be abusing little children. And that's because we repress a natural desire and think it's more holy to not have sex, which is just a, you know, immature humanity, a way of looking at it. If we're sure, we would naturally, you know, it's a fear of the id. It's the same thing. We're afraid if we don't have rules and if we don't, and at the moment we need the rules because people have impulse control issues. But if we were open to what feels natural and to what's appropriate and to what actually comes from love and clarity and intelligence, then we would naturally treat sex in a way that is appropriate. But our human minds, we see it as depraved and we then suppress it and then we have to go out and get it. And it becomes this dance and this kind of this confusion and desire and disgust, just like the questioner was saying. So what I would say is firstly to recognize that sex is really initially at its root is a reproduction and it's a genetic impulse and that it also feels good and we also desire it both for reproduction secretly but also because we desire pleasure as well and intimacy and connection and it's all that is all wrapped up together. And that there's inherently nothing wrong with it. And then you can open to your deeper impulses. You can open to your to this feeling of being disgusting because that's, I think, it's come from conditioning, so it's there. And then we're afraid to open to that, like afraid to open to this id, afraid to open to our dark impulses, afraid that we might go crazy and have sex with everybody. And I would say that, again, you don't have to follow the impulse to do it, but you can open. You can open to yourself. You can let yourself feel your feelings. Let yourself feel the intense desire for it, the desperation for it. You can let yourself feel the power and the fear and the intimacy and everything and just let yourself feel it and surrender. And then you'll find that you're releasing the built-up energy in a way, so that then when it actually comes across you in a physical sense, you can treat it with clarity rather than with pent up suppressed energy.
Yes. Yeah. Really good. And can we enjoy sex without ego? So the question here is about, can sex arise without desire? And can we enjoy it without an ego? Or is it the ego that is driving it?
No, I mean, it's the body, mind drives it. The body drives it. The genes are driving it. And you know, and it's like, no one has zero ego. I promise you that. It's simple. You can't function as a human being with zero ego. And maybe some people have less than others. But, you know, you can be yourself. You can be natural. There's no rules about it. You either want it or you don't. You feel it's a way of being intimate with your partner, or you don't need that to be intimate with your partner. There's no rules for everybody. Everybody's going to be different. But you can open to yourself. You know, it's like be in touch with yourself. Love yourself. Let yourself be as you are. So if you have a desire for sex, let yourself have a desire for sex. And you don't have to follow that impulse unless you do. And so then you see if it shows up in your life, be true to that. You know, you can have very, without an ego, you can have very beautiful, intimate, connecting sex that is not just based in me getting mine and me getting off or avoiding the world or avoiding my pain by getting pleasure or having power. It just, it loses all that stuff and it becomes like a purely self-making love to itself. You know, the universe making love to itself. Very beautiful.
Yeah, really beautiful. Yeah, I've noticed that, you know, I used to need a little bit of fantasy, you know, some kind of story or some kind of drama, dynamic thing. And more it's becoming just really none of that. Like,
yeah.
Really less story, less mental, you know, like yes. Often it's said that women need a bit of that.
Yeah.
And I'm just noticing in myself much less of that and just more body, you know, body sensation. And it's, yeah.
Intimacy.
Yeah.
Presence.
Natural.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's the same with any other human drives, you know. It's like saying, if I'm enlightened, do I no longer find pleasure in food? It's like, no, you can still enjoy food. Mm. You know, it's sex is like is a biological function that feels good.
Yeah.
And there's no problem with it whatsoever.
Mm. Yeah, and if it doesn't, because for not everybody will it feel good if there's trauma or some other things going on.
That's right. And some people want it very little, and that's fine too. Some people want it a lot, and that's fine too. And it's only the ego that starts to judge it, think of it as morally depraved, think of it as disgusting, thinking of it as something that's wrong, or thinking that it gives you power to have it, or being obsessive over it and needing it to function or needing it to feel love. All of that is ego. And all of that is dysfunctional.
Yeah. So do you encourage or recommend people to inquire into sexuality, like into that drive?
If it comes up, I don't sort of go out of my way to mention it, but if it comes up, for sure, you know, just like everything, I say inquire into everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got a question here. How do you approach these topics with your family so that they aren't taboo? You know, and this is coming from a parent with children, just to give it some context.
It's like, be honest, be yourself, be open, be loving. All of that is yourself. You are openness itself. You are space. You are honesty. You are the present moment. And there's a natural thing that happens. That's all your kids want from you, is your honesty and your openness. and these are tough subjects, but you don't have to be the one that knows everything. Mm-hmm. You can say, I don't know.
Yeah.
Since that's true, isn't it?
Mm.
Feels good to not know and to be open to not knowing. Be yourself. Be natural. See what happens. Don't ask me to tell you what to do.
I've got one little thing left to share, and it was from a conversation with Barry. And I just thought this was beautiful. We can end on this note. He says, when the madness comes in the body and then mental and emotional, if I interrupt one of these, for example, stopping the paranoia, it stops the whole thing. Then you can see it and it stops acting out. Once I discovered the sexual drive and the deceit of it, it stopped the whole thing. It was fueling the whole thing. It was driving the madness.
Beautiful. That's real inquiry, to be willing to tell the truth about how the drive, how the ego is getting involved in sex and sexuality, and how that's driving deeper delusion into this egoic sense of self. And this ego is the one that's crazy. That's what is craziness, madness, is believing that you're somebody you're not. And then all the issues show up in that context: power, neediness, self-hatred, fear. And so by inquiring into that, you can wake up. Then you can still have sex. Mm, but yeah. It's just who is having sex now.
Yeah.
And it's a whole different ball game. It's a whole different experience.
Really beautiful. Thank you, Jared.
Thank you, Sophia. Thanks for all the questions, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. And keep writing into us. Jared Franks on Facebook, you can find us, and also on Jared's website. And if you want to send any questions or topic suggestions, you have any ideas, anything you'd love to talk about, you can write me at sophiaaslove@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.